Veterans Radio is dedicated to all the men and women who have served or are currently serving in the Armed Forces of the United States of America. Today's Veterans Radio is brought to you by U.S. Wings. U.S. Wings is a U.S. manufacturer of the finest quality military leather flight jackets and much, much more. For more information about U.S. Wings, go to uswings.com or call them at 800-650-0659. 800-650-0659, uswings.com, a veteran-owned company. And the Marine Scholars Program at Ave Maria University. Go to avemaria.edu for more information about this great scholarship program. avemaria.edu. And a Village Kitchen restaurant located in the Maple Village Shopping Center in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. You come, you eat, you like, you come back. And don't forget to tell them that you heard about the Village Kitchen on Veterans Radio to receive 10% off your entire meal. And you, our loyal listeners, we couldn't do this without you.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Froneberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio this week before Christmas. We're very excited to talk to you today and hope that you'll participate in our program. If you've got a question for us here at Veterans Radio, give us a call at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. Got two great guests coming on today. One is Ron Miller, and Ron is the author of a book entitled Vietnam Special Flight, Inc. And what Ron did was he took 300 Vietnam veterans to the dedication of the Vietnam Wall back in the 1980s, and we're going to talk about that and all of his contacts with the various shakers and rollers and so forth in the American military. He spent 20 years in the service, over 20 years, three tours in Vietnam. He is also a rotorhead, much like me, and so I'm excited to talk to him. And later on in the program, we're going to be talking to our good friend Elliot Storm. For those of you who remember, he is the author of the book These Scars Are Sacred, and he has now got it coming out in an audio CD. And what's really great about this version of his story is that it's got sound effects in the background of the CD. So I think you'll find that very interesting. Elliot's going to be on later in the program. First of all, I want to thank everybody that's been going out to your local VA hospitals or your local veterans organization and donating your time and your money and your toys to help people out during this time of year. One big event that I want you to take pay special attention to is the Toys for Tots program that is sponsored by the Marine League. I think that you're going to find that will be very beneficial, and it will really make you feel good. The VBA here in the local area is going over to the VA hospital coming up on this Tuesday, and we're going to be talking and greeting the veterans that are hospitalized there and giving them some gifts. And we're hoping that in your area, your local veterans organizations are doing very similar things. There's an awful lot of things going on out there. And if you'd like to, you know, give us a call sometime later on in the program and tell us about what's going on in your part of the country, we would love to pass it on to the rest of our listening audience. So until that time occurs, we're going to go right to our first break. And that's our Marine Scholars Program, and we want you to remember that if you go to Ave Maria University down in Florida, they have a scholarship program. If you're a Marine, you won't have to pay.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
He blesses the boy as they stand in line. The smell of gun grease and their bayonets, they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I had to play Sky Pilot because our first guest is also a, there were a lot of derogatory terms that were used for us, Ron, I think, but Rotorhead, God's Own Lunatics, and various and other sundry names. And let me introduce you to our audience, to Ron Miller. Ron spent 20 years in the military, retired as a major, 3 tours in Vietnam, flew gunships, other types of helicopters, multi-engine airplanes, and all kinds of things. Along those lines, but what he's best known for is for his Operation Vietnam Special Flight. And let me just read this from his book. It says, on November 13, 1982, Ron Miller personally leased an L-1011 from Delta Airlines and took 300 Vietnam veterans to the dedication of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. As a result of his remarkable efforts, President Ronald Reagan asked him to form the Georgia Vietnam Veterans Leadership Program, a volunteer organization that was recognized as one of the best in the nation by President George H.W. Bush, who presented Ron and the GVVLP with his prestigious 1,000 Points of Lights Award in, for his service to veterans and their families. Ron, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale. I appreciate you inviting me on, and I also appreciate all the great work that you and your crew do up there in Michigan for the benefit of our veterans. I've got you streaming on live here, so I can see you, but you can't see me.
No, I can't. I've only I really don't look like this. Television adds, you know, 20 pounds to me.
Must be snowing up there a little bit because you've got some on the top of your head.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't have any, so you're at least
I still, you know, considering those helmets we wore, it's amazing how many of us have any hair. But Ron, let's talk a little bit about your military career, and then we'll get into how you got involved in this project to take the veterans to the Vietnam Memorial.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Mississippi County, which is in Arkansas, and my father was a farmer, and I decided to go to Arkansas State College at the time. It's, of course, now a university. And by the way, we just won the Sun Belt Conference. I want to put that out to everybody.
Well, congratulations.
When I went to college, the first 2 years for males were mandatory ROTC attendance. And I liked what I did. And so when it came time to go into the advanced ROTC program, I elected to do that. And my last year, the Army came out with a very interesting program. First of all, they gave us an exam, and they had 11 slots that you could go to the local airport here and get your private license, and then you are obligated for an additional year in the military. And so I got my private license prior to going into the military, and then I went to helicopter school first and then the multi-engine school, and I absolutely loved helicopters. They're, you know, it's a lot of fun, a lot of work, but I had a great career, and I'm glad I stayed in.
Well, I can attest to your comment about how wonderful it is to actually fly in a helicopter. It's like sitting in an easy chair and just watching the world go by at 120 miles an hour.
I know. Back then, you know, especially early on in my career, you know, it wasn't as regimental as it is now, but, you know, we could check out a helicopter and take it on cross country. And one time I went to me and a friend flew an H-34, one of the large cargo helicopters, mm-hmm. over to my area here in Arkansas, and we landed near one of my brother's house. My whole family was there, and I gave them a tour of the helicopter inside, and then I left there and went to my father's farm, and my brother-in-law was combining beans, and as you may know, when they combine those things, it throws out a bunch of chat and everything in the rear, and I saw him going away from me, and I, I got down to about a 5-foot hover and hovered up behind him, and it looked like a tornado on both sides. And he turned around and saw a big helicopter right behind him and almost jumped off the combine.
Well, I can certainly relate to that. We did something along those lines.
Yeah.
Flying back from Fort Benning to Fort Rucker once, we decided we needed some corn. So we landed some farmer's corn.
I hate to tell your audience this, but one time we were up in a two-divisional exercise up in South Carolina and North Carolina, and there was a huge commercial watermelon field near where we stayed out in the woods. And so we just landed one day and picked up one. It didn't have a bucket or anything, so we couldn't leave them a tip.
Well, we'll have to have you back on with some other pilots, and we can tell lies then about what we did. So when you got out of the when did you get out of the service?
I retired in 1980 and moved back to Atlanta, Georgia, where I spent three tours and loved it a lot. So I moved back to Atlanta.
Okay. Now tell us about this Vietnam special flight that you did and how
In 1982, and around October, I was watching Nightline, the TV program, and they did a special on the upcoming dedication of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And so, as you know, Delta Airlines is headquartered in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And me being a pilot for so many years, I thought, well, I know I want to go. And I called a few friends, and they all wanted to go. And so then I came up with a wild idea of leasing an aircraft from Delta and taking Vietnam veterans to the dedication. And I just got in the car and drove up out there. And by that time, I'd figured out, you know, what I wanted to call it. And I'm sure Delta, the charter people at Delta, thought I was crazy because you had to lease the aircraft, which meant the first figure that they gave me was $42,500.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I thought, well, I've come this far, so I agreed to that verbally, and so my first stop was with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and they liked the idea. As a matter of fact, the managing editor was a Vietnam-era veteran,
mm-hmm.
and for the folks that are listening that does not know what that means, they served during the Vietnam War but didn't make it there. And as I was walking out of his door over to the managing editor, he said, well, by the way, I'm a Vietnam-era veteran, and in my book, I say, I'll bet nobody in that operation there knew he was a Vietnam veteran.
Well,
because nobody talked about it then.
That's true.
And then I went over to the managing editor, and he was a Vietnam veteran. And he liked the story, and he said, we'll run some articles for you and see what we can do. And they did, but it was a very short article, no pictures, et cetera. And I thought, here we go. And I only had 3 weeks to form a nonprofit and to do a lot of other different things, and I thought, well, I may make it, I may not, but I'm going to try. And so, to make a long story short, a Delta pilot whose brother served in Vietnam called me, and he said, I think we can help you out. I'll get the entire crew to fly on their days off, and that'll lower the cost of the charter. And we had a World War II pilot was the first officer, and then two. The L-1011 had three pilots, and mm-hmm. the other two pilots were Vietnam veterans, and then they got 11 flight attendants to fly free, and they kept bugging the president of the airlines to reduce the fare, and finally he said, okay, give it to him for the cost of the fuel, and back then it was $25,000. So
wow.
I started to work with the corporate people, and to make a long story short, 98 Vietnam veterans went free. I mean, paid $98, mm-hmm. and the other 200 went free. So it was a great flight. We took some radio and TV folks with us, and it was just marvelous, really.
I'm encouraging people to get Ron's book. It's called Vietnam Special Flight, Inc., and Ron Miller is our guest right now on Veterans Radio. And let's give a plug to the corporations that helped you out.
Well, Lockheed, as you may know, had one of their plants in Atlanta, and they stepped up to the plate. Georgia Power, Coca-Cola, Texaco, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution helped quite a bit, as did the Marietta Daily Journal. And so And we got great donations from just ordinary people, but it went down to the wire, and I thought probably if it didn't make it, I'd have to leave town. But we had to apply for, or Delta and myself had to apply for a waiver from the Civil Aeronautics Board. They're not called that anymore, but they control things like that. And the attorney for Delta actually flew to Washington and hand-carried the request for the waiver to them all about a week and a half or 2 weeks prior to the flight. And I kept checking in with him, and we hadn't gotten it. So finally I called up there, and I told him, I said, look, we're getting down to the wire, and we're going to have a lot of angry people here if we have to cancel this thing. So the day before the flight, we got the approval from CAB.
Wow.
To allow them to fly us up there.
I think it's an amazing story. If you go, you know, type in the name of the book, you can on the cover, the photograph is of the crew and all the volunteers that went along with Ron up to the Vietnam Memorial. And I was just thinking when you said that, I think we're coming up on, isn't it the 30th anniversary this coming year?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
I guess if we start planning now, maybe we can do that again.
Yeah, well, I might try to do that. I may go up one way or the other. I have been back several times since then. I worked in D.C. for 2 years for Senator Dole, and I got to go over there a lot, and I really enjoyed it. One of the most unusual things that happened on the flight, I got a call one night. I worked day and night on the thing, and it was an individual from a little town called LaGrange, which is just south of Atlanta, and he told me that he was a disabled veteran and that he was a dog handler in Vietnam.
Oh,
and
okay.
And I thought, that's interesting. And we talked a little bit, and he said, you know, because he was awarded the Silver Star and several other awards, he was on the sort of the speaking circuit there. And Fort Benning would allow him to come and check out a dog, a German Shepherd, and take him to these, you know, schools, mostly
right.
High schools and things like that. And he asked me, he told me a story that shocked me. He said, did you know that none of the dogs were brought home because of the disease factor? So they left the dogs over there. And he said, do you think I can take a dog on the flight with us? And I said, well, I'm sure we can. Let me call Delta. And I called him. They said, well, yeah, and we'll put him in a cage, you know, a cage type thing and put him in the cargo hold. And I said, fine. And I told him that. And he showed up that day, and he had this beautiful dog and had a great blanket-type thing over him with all the patches on, and the media loved him. I mean, I think he was interviewed by ever media outlet there. So when you charter a flight, you're responsible for checking everybody in, and fortunately I had a great friend, a retired lieutenant colonel, that did that for me. And so we started checking them in, and it came time for the dog to go up, and so he walked up with his dog, and I told him to just go on the airplane, and the dog just walked in on the plane and was a great hit and flew up with us in the cabin.
Well, I can certainly understand that, and one of our partners here on Veterans Radio, Vance McCrum, was a dog handler with the Air Force and a couple of other dog handlers in the area, so I know that they'll like that story.
Yes.
And because we've done, I think actually we've done more than one program on dog handlers. It's fascinating what those, you know, how important those dogs were.
Well, and they're very important in the war on terrorism.
Absolutely.
Very, very important because of the IED problem. They can sniff out those IEDs, if you can believe that.
I know. It's just amazing. We're talking with Ron Miller here, the author of a book entitled Vietnam Special Flight, Inc. I neglected to tell everybody that in addition to being a helicopter pilot in Vietnam for 3 tours, I don't know how you did that. One was plenty for me. But he also was awarded 2 Distinguished Flying Crosses, a couple of Bronze Stars, you know, 20 or 30 Air Medals, and a bunch of other service medals. So you made good use of your time over there, Ron.
Yeah.
And retired.
Well, it was an interesting 3 tours, I can say that. The first one especially because we flew almost every day, and we were located part of the time in the infamous Cochi City, where the Cochi tunnels are now. One of their top tourist draws when people go to Vietnam, especially the veterans. They've enlarged the tunnels quite a bit so Americans can get in them and look around.
I would think so. All those tunnel rats out there would probably have appreciated that 40 years ago.
Yeah.
When they were out there. Well, I was in Coochie many times. I was in Three Corps also. And so, I was very familiar with that, and that's very close to the Michelin rubber plantation.
Absolutely.
That we talked about before. I just want, if you could tell that story, I always complained that I won't buy Michelin tires because every time I went past the Michelin rubber plantation, somebody would shoot at me, and I couldn't shoot back without permission, and by the time I got permission, I was long gone.
It was off limits for quite some time because it was a functioning rubber plantation.
Right.
And actually, during my first tour, it was still being run by a French company, and the man who oversaw the whole thing was French, and so it was totally off limits. Except during the latter part of my tour, of course, when it's off limits, that means the VC and the NBA.
Yeah, they go there. That's where they live.
That's where they live, and they. They kept running exercises out of there and shooting at us. So finally, the powers to be said, "Let's go in." So they went in, and I supported, the ground troops that went in, and I was making a gun run one time, and as you know, we had the 2.75 rockets,
mm-hmm.
14 of them, seven on each side, and I fired a couple of them out, and about 15 meters out in front of the windscreen, the motor blew up. Not the round itself, but the motor and the fins came back and hit the windshield and the rotor blades and all that. So I had to break off and go back to the airfield, which is not very far from there. But maintenance people fixed it up and we flew it back to Coochie.
I was going to say, when was your first tour there?
1966, almost the entire year.
Okay. You were right there at the beginning of all the adventures.
Oh, they had Attleboro, the big exercise, and
mm-hmm.
the 25th Infantry Division headquarters was there.
Okay, yeah, my unit didn't even get over there until 1967,
uh-huh.
And then we flew out of Long Bend, and I think I told you a place called Plantation.
I know it well.
A lot of refueling went on there.
I know.
And so we did this flight. It sounds like, of course, it was extremely successful. And then you got a call from.
I received a call from the federal agency ACTION, ACTION. And at that time, the Peace Corps came under that, foster grandparents, all kinds of programs like that. And President Reagan nominated an individual by the name of Tom Paukin, P-A-U-K-E-N, who lived in the Dallas area. He was an attorney and did quite a bit of work in that area, in that field. And he would go to these professional organizations meetings and, like the chamber and places like that, and he had run into these Vietnam veterans that had, that held high positions and were lawyers and doctors and all kinds of things like that. So they asked him to he was an appointee, to come up and take over ACTION. And when he did, he talked Congress and the president to put these Vietnam Veterans Leadership Programs in each state. California had two and Florida had two, to provide assistance to Vietnam veterans. And they called me and asked me if I would like to take that job, and I thought it was a federal job, and I told them no, I wasn't interested in it. So I went on vacation to Aspen, but I did put them in touch with a few guys that went on the flight. And the more I heard about the program, the more I liked it. It was basically nonprofit. We could, the executive director and the board could do basically what they wanted to. It was sort of a hands-off type deal, and the more I looked at it and heard about it, then I decided, I came back and said, well, if you didn't fill that slot, I think I'd like to do that. And so it was an incredible program, and it was all over the United States, and they did a superb job. All the board of directors were volunteers, and it was amazing, really.
Well, yeah, now I wish I'd paid more attention in the early 80s, probably.
Yeah.
Would have helped out a little bit more, but this came down from the Reagan White House.
Yes, it did.
And it turns out that he was very supportive of the Vietnam veterans and what were some of the problems that they were having in getting jobs.
Absolutely, and he did one thing that the veteran community had been asking for forever. He upgraded the Veterans Administration to a cabinet-level position, and he gave the VA secretary a seat at the cabinet table, which meant a great deal.
Oh, I would think.
I mean, unbelievable, really.
So we were working with Ronald Reagan, and you got to go to the White House with all these people, and we've shown a couple of photos of you at the White House as that was going along. And then you moved on to George H.W. Bush.
Yes. I had an opportunity to meet him, as you may recall from recent history. His VA secretary floated an idea to allow veterans' hospitals that were underutilized to allow civilians to use them, and it caused a firestorm, of course, from the veteran community. And so I had become acquainted with and started working with a retired General Ray Davis, who was a four-star Marine that retired as the Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps. And we wanted to do what we could to help, so we set up a meeting of a lot of the veteran leadership in Atlanta when the president came there for another function. And the general and I actually, believe it or not, rode in the limo with him out to this thing, which is like 20 minutes out and 20 minutes back. And, of course, all that happened because of who General Davis was.
Right.
And but, you know, the damage had been done, and so it caused quite a bit of consternation in the veteran community, and a lot of them didn't support him, so he was a one-termer. But he also was extremely supportive of veterans. As you know, he was one of the youngest Navy pilots during World War II, and actually was flying an Avenger, you know, a three-crew dive bomber type thing, and he was making a gun run on an island in Japan and was shot down. Two of his crew didn't survive the shoot down. He managed to get out, and as luck would have it, there was a submarine in that area, and it surfaced and rescued him out of the water.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, there's an 8-millimeter clip that I've seen several times picking him up at the front end of the submarine, and he's walking back down toward the conning tower. But he was a very good man, was very, very supportive of the veteran community.
Well, he also honored you with one of his 1,000 points, or your organization with one of his 1,000 points of light.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's coming up on your screen or not, but there he is at the first flight of the new Air Force One, which was a 747, and the individual in the wheelchair was a triple amputee from Vietnam, and he was the chairman of my board of directors, Tommy Clack.
Oh, okay. And this was down in Georgia, right?
Yes. The plane landed at Dobbins Air Force Base in Marietta, but it's, you know, right on the outskirts of Atlanta. And he spent a lot of time with us there because we were at the end of the line, for one thing. And so the steps leading up, if the photograph's up, are very steep and very tall. And we were supposed to get a tour of Air Force One, and Tommy said, I'm not going to put those folks out. It'd take four people to carry me up. And so we started back to the terminal, and a Secret Service agent ran over and stopped us and said, the president called back from the limo and said, make sure those two Vietnam veterans gets the VIP tour. And Tommy said, no, we don't want to do that. And he said, sir, I have my order. So four of them carried him up those steps. And instead of turning right to go down into the main part of the 747, they turned us left. And we got a tour of the president's personal quarters, showed where if need be, he could be operated on that thing, had a doctor with him at all times. They even let us see the cockpit. So it was a terrific day for us, and they loaded us up with memorabilia, and I still have a lot of that left around here.
I know. I think that's incredible. We're coming up at a break at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be playing our Medal of Honor and see if you recognize who it is today. We're talking with Ron Miller, the author of the book Vietnam Special Flight. When we come back after our break, we're going to be talking with him about his adventures with Bob Hope. I told a story just this morning. When I was in Vietnam in 1968, when I first got there, my first mission was to fly over Long Bien while the show was going on because I was the new guy in town.
My goodness.
Yeah, so when we get back, we'll be talking again with Ron Miller. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with Elliot Storm later on. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Major Patrick Brady rescued 51 men in one day. Details after this. Brady was flying medevac helicopters on his second tour in Vietnam when he volunteered to rescue two badly wounded South Vietnamese soldiers in enemy territory. When he arrived, the site was shrouded in fog. He descended slowly until he saw the tops of trees and then moved sideways to the landing site. Despite heavy enemy fire, he was able to locate the soldiers and evacuated them. Brady was called to another fogged-in area where American casualties lay close to enemy lines. He lowered his chopper through the fog and found a stream bed that led to the wounded. In all, he made five flights to rescue 39 GIs. On his third mission, the controls on his chopper were hit, but he managed to get home. He got a replacement chopper in return. On his fourth mission, Brady watched a mine explode near the landing site, forcing another medevac to leave. Brady went in and set his chopper in the skid marks of the other craft. Two crew members were carrying a stretcher to the chopper when one stepped on a mine. The explosion blew a hole in Brady's craft. He managed to get it off the ground and delivered the six severely wounded men to the aid station. He picked up another helicopter and kept flying. In all, he evacuated 51 men that day. 400 bullet holes were counted in the helicopters he flew that day. Brady went on to become a major general in the United States Army. He was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Nixon on October 9th, 1969. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Join us at communityofveterans.org and connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
The memory of sentimental verse, nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse.
All right, for all of you out there, who was that mystery voice? Anybody over probably 40 years old will recognize that as Bob Hope.
Yeah.
Or maybe 30. I don't know.
Yeah,
not
right.
Sure. But I played that because Ron had the privilege of protecting Bob when he was in Vietnam in 1966, and you got kind of stuck like I did, flying protective flights around the show and didn't get to see him. But you did get to see him later on, and I'd like you to tell our audience about your experiences with Bob Hope.
Well, how ironic is that? Here I am talking to a helicopter pilot that did exactly the same thing that I did in 1966. Bob Hope came to Coochie first in Christmas of 66, and I had the great thrill of seeing his show there. And then after that, he went to Long Bend, which as if anybody is out there and is a Vietnam veteran will remember that it was one of the largest installations in Vietnam. That's where a lot of the guys came through there, processing in and out, and had a big airfield at Benoit, et cetera. And I was told to get two gunships ready and go over and fly anti-mortar patrol during his show. And so I did, and we got there a little early, and I took an aerial photograph of all the GIs were there, and there were thousands. You may have heard how many could get in there, but it had to be thousands and thousands. So we accomplished our mission, and after the show was over, then we went back to Coochie, and so I had that photograph, and one day I was going through some of my albums, and I came up on all that information that I had worked up for the flight, and so I just sat down and worked up a letter, and I ask the Medal of Honor recipient, Leo Thorsness, who was an Air Force 105 pilot and got the Medal of Honor before he was shot down and held as a POW, for Mr. Hope's address, personal address, because I knew he knew it. And so I got it, and I sent Mr. Hope a two-page letter and a copy of the photograph, and I asked him if he would consider doing a show in Atlanta. And in the letter I said, I was providing anti-mortar support for your show in Long Bend, and as you may recall, not a single round fell on your performance.
There you go.
And when he responded back to me quickly, he quoted that exact statement back to me. And so I went to work. You know, Ted Turner had a UHF program back then. It wasn't as big as it turned out to be, but I asked him if he would do a special show for Vietnam veterans and their families, and Turner had agreed to broadcast it, and so I received a letter back quickly and said, well, that's a very interesting thing you're doing there, but you know, I've been under contract with NBC forever, and I'm not allowed to do things like that. So I sort of set it aside, and I thought, well, why don't we just do it without TV? And I went back to him, and he was coming that way anyway, and he agreed to do it, and it was unbelievable. We had a lot of the movers and shakers come up with some monies to help us make it a first-class affair. And it was at the famous Fox Theater, Egyptian theater type thing in Atlanta, where they premiered Gone with the Wind, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
It's been reworked, but it's a beautiful old theater. And he agreed to do it, and we had the governor there and had a little reception prior to that. And he was just an unbelievable nice man. And his wife came with him, and she sang a couple of songs, and she was very good. And, you know, the big kick on Hope for a long time is he couldn't do anything without reading cue cards. Well, he did an hour show that evening without looking at one. And I sent a message up through Mr. Paulkin at Action and asked for a telegram from the president to read. And sure enough, we got it. And so I read the telegram on stage to him. And I didn't have a hard copy at that time, but later on I sent him the hard copy. And I'm told that it's in his museum type thing in San Diego, but one of these days I'm going to go out and look at it for myself.
Well, we have in the past, we've been doing Veterans Radio now for 8 years, and initially when we started, we were doing a program around Christmas time about Bob Hope. And what was so great was that the family, Bob Hope family and estate, said that we could do anything we wanted. We had their permission to use any outtakes,
cuts,
anything along those lines if we wanted to. And they're continuing on with what Bob Hope did for America and America's veterans.
Yeah, you know, the USO was created in 1941 during World War II, and they asked him if he was famous back then, you know, would you mind coming out to March Field there in California, airfield, and perform for the troops? And he said he wasn't too sure that he wanted to do it, but he agreed, and then he made the statement that's been quoted forever. He said he went out, did his show, and it was the best audience in the world. And his last USO show overseas was in the Middle East during the war on terrorism. But he's, you know, he lived to be 100 years old, by the way.
I know. That's like George Burns.
I know.
You know those
Well, that's what he made a statement one time that he wanted to live as long as George Burns did, you know.
Well, he did. And he certainly is living in the hearts and minds of all veterans for the last 70 years. He certainly was an influence, I think, to all of us. And he really carried the veteran story home with him when he did all of those special, you know, the Christmas specials.
I know.
It was something that we really looked forward to, because every once in a while you might see somebody that you knew.
Yeah, exactly. Well, at one point in time, and of course it's still relevant today, they referred to him as America's number one soldier in grease paint.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some incredible stories to tell on some of the – I mean, he was shot at a few times over there, and one time in an airplane, and they wondered if they were going to make it or not.
Well, you could certainly understand that. That would be a really big target for the bad guys.
Oh, my goodness, what a coup that would have been.
Well, you know, when you put on their program down in Atlanta, you also tried to get General Westmoreland there.
Well, they were good friends, and and I actually we sent him two airline tickets. He lived in Charleston, and he was coming. But as you recall, that was at the same time that he filed a lawsuit against CBS for what they said about him.
Oh, right, yes.
It was totally untrue, and so he had to call. He was coming, but he had to call and cancel out because they were having the hearing on the final part of the suit. And, you know, they settled out of court, but he felt vindicated for it. And of course, Bob Hope called him Westy, his good friend, and he was a little disappointed that he didn't make it because they were really good friends, as I understand it.
Well, I think it's just amazing when you find out the true history of what occurred in Vietnam and how the stories changed, have changed and evolved over the last 40 years. And in many cases, we find out actually what really did happen. And of course, you know, without getting into the politics of the whole thing, but it was probably the first micromanaged war. And
I don't know if you've seen it or not, but they showed it a couple of years ago. The Marines kept asking to see the sand table of caisson that was used by the president, President Johnson, to micromanage the war up there. And finally, they got approval, and they brought the sand table out. The only thing, and I saw the photograph of them. There's about 10 or 11 of the Marines that were in there, and so it was a micromanaged from the White House all the way down. It was unbelievable, really.
Ron, we got about 3 minutes left, and as usual, I'm going to have you back on the program to talk about more things.
I would love it.
But I want you to, briefly, in our 3 minutes, to tell us about this movie that you're working on right now called The Perfume River.
Well, as you know, the Perfume River is one of the main rivers that comes out of China and goes right almost directly through the city of Hue up in the northern part of South Vietnam. And a friend of mine was in the Marine Corps, and he was sent in to the Citadel. They had an ARVID division in there, and to be the forward observer for naval gunfire and also for the regular artillery. And he got trapped in there during the Tet Offensive, and he spent like 14 days, ran out of food and all kinds of things. And that's the central part of the movie, but there is much, much more to it. And without giving anything away, two Vietnamese officers came to Quantico when my friend Alex was in officers' basic school there.
Mm-hmm.
And when they graduated from TBS, then they, of course, went back to Vietnam. And then Alex joined them later and worked as a FO out in the field for about 6 months with the Marines. And then he got put into the Citadel. And one of them was there in the Citadel with that Arvin battalion, I mean division, and that's sort of the catalyst of the story. But there is a lot more to it. It has been green-lighted by Hollywood, and we signed an option a few months ago, and they are now currently looking for a director. And the title is Perfume River. It'll be easy to remember. And.
Yeah.
And it's not a war movie. Basically, it has a lot more to it than that. And I think people will enjoy it. And I know that the Vietnam veteran community will like it quite a bit.
There have been more and more movies that are finally coming out that are telling, you know, the other side of the story.
Right.
You know, of what, not just the fighting part of it, but the personal trials and tribulations that you had to go through there, and especially when we got home.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, there were a few problems that we had.
Oh my goodness!
Getting back into the country.
and of course, you've heard this many times, but I can absolutely tell you that it's true. When I landed from my first tour back in California, we had to pull off our uniforms because we flew charter. We had a ticket on civilian airlines, you know, to go to our home wherever that might be, and. I couldn't believe it, but, you know, we had to strip down and go in and take all our clothes off and then put our civilian clothes back on to go home. That was amazing, really.
That was, and we're going to be talking about that with our next guest after the break. But right now we've been talking with Ron Miller, Vietnam Special Flight, Inc. Go on the Internet, just Google that in there, or Google his name in there with Vietnam Special Flight. You really should read this book. This guy knows everybody. Well, and so we're anxious to have you back on the program at some time in the future. And, Ron, thank you so very much for what you do for veterans.
Well, thank you, Dale, and thank you a great deal for all that you do. I now know where to come and hear every show.
Okie dokie. Thank you very much. You're listening Goodbye. To Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
Goodbye. You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Redundant, wasn't it? Anyway, we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're going to be talking with our very good friend, Elliot Storm, whose book is These Scars Are Sacred, The Shocking Truth of PTSD. And Elliot has been on the program a couple of times. Actually, it was quite a while ago now when I think about it. Elliot was in the Marines, two Purple Hearts, Combat Action Ribbon, Vietnam Cross of Gallantry, Vietnam 1969, MOS 0311. What in the world is that?
What is that?
Yeah.
It's a combat. It's let's see. My MOS is I'm a professional director of small arms.
That sounds very official.
I think so. Hey, welcome home, Dale. Good morning, and it's really a pleasure to be back on your show. And welcome home to all my brothers out there.
It's a real honor.
And sisters now.
That's right. We have many of our sisters coming home, and they're going to need help just as much as everybody else does. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you've done with your book. Now, The Scars Are Sacred came out in, what, 2006?
Yeah, it's been going, you know, it's in its 10th edition. And we were blessed. I guess people said it was the right time, right place. And, of course, Debbie and I have been traveling all over the country. And one of our favorite times was back in Michigan with you.
Thank you.
And yesterday I had the honor and the pleasure to go to one of your old home states. I was invited to LZ Hope. It was the largest PTSD group in the country in New Jersey.
That's understandable in New Jersey.
Well, it comes people from Pennsylvania, and they all come. It's a great group of bros.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, the senior vice commander of the American Legion, Wayne Morgan, drove over with me, and one of our sponsors, which wants to remain anonymous, they're very humble, they bought 200 copies of our audio to distribute to all the guys there. And last year they gave them to Walter Reed and the VA hospitals. And, you know, and finally, you know, through the blessings of God, our agent landed us a national distributor, Tander Media.
Mm-hmm.
And now folks can purchase the audio right online. And I think if you listen to it on our website, you can get a little bite of the introduction. We even put, sound effects in.
Yeah,
it. It sounds almost like a movie.
Yeah. Well, what we wanted to do, Elliot, is that I downloaded some of that last night and edited out about 2 minutes of your hero in the book, who is cleverly disguised, not being you.
Jim Clark is not a hero. The only heroes we have, bro, are on a wall in D.C.
That's true. That's true. But I want to play the little segment that I took out of here. And this is after there was a firefight with the VC and North Vietnamese Army, and they're getting ready for another wave to come toward them. Let's just listen to this portion, and then we'll come right back.
Okay. Open up with machine guns firing in a crisscross pattern. Pour out massive firepower, keeping what's left of the platoon's heads and hands down. Then, an aggressive assault charge online, enemy rushing with AK-47s blazing, and when they get close enough, they will toss grenades in on the Marines' position. Jim wanted payback for Chief and the rest of his dead friends, but there is little he can do except defend. Everyone's keeping their heads down, firing over the top of the ditch. Their only defense is massive firepower. The spray of lead holds Charlie in check momentarily. It's not possible to get the Marines online for a counterassault. The Gooks have their position and would cut them down as soon as they raise their heads. Suddenly, Lane screams. A bullet shot through his wrist. The round shatters bone, ripping flesh. It passed through, leaving a large insult, blood gushing lavishly. In an instant, his scream becomes a sigh. He gasps for air, then falls back dead from shock. Jim pulls a canteen off the belt of Sugar Bear, the dead radio man, and drinks. All six of his own are empty. Jim feels rage, his numbness worn off, realizing he has to do something quick if they're going to survive. His eyes fix on the men in the ditch. All are shaking.
That's from the CD audio of These Scars Are Sacred by Elliot Storm.
Guy Ortoliva did the read. He's a guy, quite a voice. We tried about 10 different people, and Guy was the best. He's a former lawyer, Hollywood producer kind of a person, and he and I became friendly, and I asked him, I said, would you like to do the read? And he did a great job on it. What I was really pleased about, it's error-free. You don't hear any gasps.
Mm-hmm.
And after it was all done, he asked me, he says, Elliot, what do you think? And I sat back and I said, Guy, I think it needs a little bit something else. He says, what's that? I said, I want sound effects. And I don't think it's ever been done before, but it took like 14 hours to put the sound effects just in the introduction. And what we did, as you know, and I think your name is on there also, mm-hmm. we went out and gathered sponsors to do. We did this independently.
Mm-hmm.
And we gathered 20 sponsors to have the audio made. And like I said, Tandor Media just picked it up, and now they're distributing it online. It made my job easier, but if folks want it, they can go to Tandor, TANTOR.com, and they can download the entire book. We're pleased with it. You know, I think our next book's better. But in fact, your name's in the next one.
Uh-oh.
Well, what I did, I don't think it's ever been done before, Dale. Instead of dedicating the book to anybody in particular, I took folks who helped me through that first one. And it was a trial and error. I mean, you know what we went through.
Sure.
You know, and what I did is I dedicated each chapter to someone very special in my life. And I think you're going to find your name, and I think it's chapter 11.
Well, I will be
but,
truly honored.
But don't cast your fate to the wind.
I can hardly wait to see that.
Well, read it. But I'm hoping Tandor will publish that one for us all, so we'll change publishers. But, you know, my hope is that my friends in Michigan will invite us back out again this summer. So we'll be in Florida this fall, or this spring. Debbie and I will be heading down to Florida in the fall. I think we're going to Gettysburg in the spring, but we've got a free summer this year.
Well, we'll see what we can arrange. Let's go back and talk a little bit about your book, because we have so many more new listeners that probably aren't familiar with These Scars Are Sacred, and just talk briefly about, you know, the theme of the book. We don't have to get into
it. It's a high-intensity philosophical novel about the proverbial boy next door. He finds himself, and he's well-trained by the Green Corps, and he comes, and he, it's a story about betrayals, you know, when he came home, and large and small. But I think most of all, it's kind of a healing or a catharsis for all of us. And it's not for just Vietnam vets. It came for the families and these new kids that are coming home now. I think this is why Tandor picked us up to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they're going to be – we're hoping our agents working now that they're going to take the book over. You can download it online that way. It's working for these kids that are coming home now, because I think it stimulates anybody who's been there. But – most of all, for the families to know what you went through, Dale,
mm-hmm.
and my brothers and sisters are going through now. I think that's what – I think in a nutshell, that's what it curtails. But, you know, we were blessed with it. You know, just that's all I can say. You know, there's controversy with it. But folks can go to our website, thesecardsaresacred.com, take a look at it. I think there's some interviews on there, and I think there's some chapters they can read.
It's a great website. Everything is improving as we go along. We were such neophytes and amateurs when we got started. We just said, okay, we can do this. Why not?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we all got from the military. Sure, we can do this.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, you know, with my novel and myself, we found a lot of controversy. You know, there's a lot of hatred out there. And, of course, I've got nemesis, of course. You know, I've been, you know, he's a phony. I love that part because all that does is help me sell more books. It's all it's ever done.
That's what they say, you know. Well, any publicity is good publicity sometimes.
In fact, CNN called me the most controversial author in New England. I think we sold 10,000 copies the next day. And I'm going to be on Fox on Monday.
This is a local or national Fox?
I think it's going to be national Fox. We're going to catch that on Monday morning. But we've been, you know, we've been blessed. We have a good agent. Debbie, I think, has worked harder than I did because, you know, she drives that big rig of ours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. And we've been able to, you know, blessed because she is a school teacher. During the summers, we tour the country in our breaks and things like that. And we've been invited all over the country. We've done two trips to West Point. We've been to Naval War Colleges. And, of course, we've done Yale out here. And I think one of our, you know, it's really been a pleasure to go out to the University of Michigan when you brought me there.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really dynamic is, you know, our 40th anniversary is coming up March.
Right.
And we're having I guess the state of Connecticut's having a welcome home celebration for Vietnam vets in New England. And I got an email the day before yesterday. They asked me to be a guest speaker. So that's an honor.
That is.
I wish my buddy Dale could come out here and talk with me.
It's becoming more of an honor, and I think it's a privilege for us to tell the story of veterans from all generations. And this is what we've always done here on Veterans Radio, and we're so grateful for what you've been able to do, Elliot. With These Scars Are Sacred is something that I recommend to families to read. It's not going to be an easy read for you, but you're going to get a better understanding of what dad or your sister or your brother or your uncle went through, and it doesn't make any difference.
Go to Tandor.com and download it.
There you go.
Download it. Listen to it. It's a great – I mean, I am so pleased with the way it sounds, you know, because I really didn't have much to do with it.
But it does sound good. Elliot, we got to go, but
God
I want to thank
Dale.
You so very much. Have a blessed holiday season and Merry Christmas
you too,
to
brother.
You and Debbie. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, brother. Semper Fi. Bye-bye.
Fine. See you. I can't say Semper Fi. I'm not a Marine. We want to make sure everybody knows next weekend is Christmas Eve, and what we're going to be doing on the program is asking you, what was Christmas like when you were in the service? So get on the Internet and start sending us emails. Hit that contact button if you want to be on the program, and we'll find out what it was like when you were there. I want to thank Bob Gould for being in the studio and helping me out today with the webcast. Nina, she's no longer the FNG, that's for sure. And we are very happy to have Nina here. Merry Christmas. Until next time, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or the station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.